You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that's like a bicycle. You put a heck of a lot into it just to get a little out of it. It's SIFPA. Welcome to SIFPOP Weekly, streaming live most Fridays, are available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks.
Third time's a charm.
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and his people are from Norway, and it does make him a freaking Viking. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Sweden, but ahoy!
Well, you know, Scandinavia.
We're next door neighbors.
That's
we're
right,
neighbors.
Scandinavia. And each week we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our guest this week. She's waiting to be discovered and become a professional Baldur's Gator. It's Alice!
You know it. You know it. I eat, breathe, and live it. It's a problem. It's fine.
Amazing. You're going to wake up one day, you're going to look at your computer, and it's going to say, click here to enter the Baldur's Gate program. And you're going to get whisked away by Hopper.
Oh my gosh.
And learn how to... do professional Baldur's Gating.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, I play Baldur's Gate on the PlayStation, on the PS5. So very in line with the theme this week.
There you go. That is because we're going to finally talk about Gran Turismo. It's been out for a while. It's actually out on VOD, I think, either this week or last week, very recently. And so we're going to go ahead and chat that one because we missed it 1 week while I was gone. And then we'll talk a new movie as well, Flora and Son, just recently out on Apple TV+. So wanted to take a look at that one. Of course, we'll do a best ever challenge looking at family movies. That doesn't mean what you think it does. It means movies where there is a family member title in the title of the movie. So we're going to do that. And then we've got some buried treasure to go along with it as well. No reason to wait. Let's go ahead and get into it. Let's kick it off by talking about Flora and Son.
Young Max. One more offense and you'll be behind bars. Flora, you're his mother. Find him something to do.
What are you doing right now?
You don't want to know.
You are a great mother.
Am I?
Happy birthday.
What's that?
It's yours.
Don't want to play. Since when am I a guitarist?
I can't go on like this. Living in a shoebox with a kid who hates me.
Can't wait for the day I don't have to be here.
Go on! Go back to your dad! I might learn the guitar myself.
That's just too funny. Takes years of practice, commitment.
Are you really going to talk to me about commitment?
Single mom Flora is at a loss for what to do with her rebellious teenage son, Max. Her efforts to keep him out of trouble lead to a beat-up acoustic guitar, a washed-up LA musician, and harmony for this frayed Dublin family. This movie, of course, comes to us from John Carney, who... you may know from other movies where music is the hero. That is kind of his thing. It's what he does. So I don't have them listed, but if my memory serves me, Begin Again,
Sing Street,
and Once are his other films. Mm-hmm. So thank you both for not giving me a chance to remember, but just jumping in. I really appreciate, you know, my aging brain. I have to get there on my own, guys. Give me a second. Give me just like 1.5 seconds to get the next one. Anyhow, he's got a new one out, and once again, centers around music. We are dealing with Eve Hewson, who you may know as the daughter of Bono from U2, or
what?
You may not. Alice didn't know her.
I knew her from Behind Her Eyes, the Netflix series.
Oh, very nice. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, JGL, stepping in as well. Jack Rayner in there too, as well as many others. What did you guys think of Flora and Son? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay? Alice, why don't you start?
I think I really liked it, maybe even loved it. Maybe let's say low side of loved it for now.
Low side of loved it. Putting it in the loved it category. Andrew, mm-hmm. What about you?
I'm going to go with liked it. Maybe low side of liked it.
Andrew is going on low side of liked it. I'm going to join you there on the low side of liked it. I don't think I can come away from this movie saying it was just okay. I didn't love it, and I kind of liked it. So yeah, low side of liked it works for me. Alice, you loved it more than we did. Tell us about why this played on your heartstrings.
Yeah, very good.
Well, they don't just give this job to anybody.
Well, first of all, I will say I love the, like, John Carney's films. I think his, like, non-musical musicals, they're just so pretty. And I mean pretty in the story. They're always so simple, and yet the music's always great. I always end up listening to the music, like, over and over again. I remember after I saw Sing Street, I just on repeat constantly. Mm-hmm. That's definitely my favorite. Yeah, exactly.
By the way, they are musicals. They're just what is it? Is diegetic? Is that the word?
Diegetic, they're diegetic musicals. I just call them non-musical musicals because when you say musicals, people think like Chicago or something into song.
Broadway,
you know?
Exactly.
It's definitely not like contemporary musical.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so it's like the music, there is the same amount of music. It's just, it makes sense when they break into song because they're meant to be breaking into song. And so I've always loved them. Sing Street's still definitely my favorite of them. And mm-hmm. I'd say this one's potentially also below Begin Again, but I still really enjoyed this film because I love the way in which he develops his characters. Like, I find that even though it's a simple story and it's not a very long movie either, I still felt like, you know, he doesn't just give the easy go to the characters. He doesn't just go, oh, like, this is a bad guy, this is a good guy, this person's terrible, this person's mm-hmm. not. Like, they all have layers, they all have dimension, which I think, you know, it would be so easy to make it more like caricatures. But I really find myself connecting to the characters and then in turn connecting to music through them. Because that's another thing. I'm not like, I consume a lot, okay? I consume so much content and something has to give. And typically it's music for me. Most of the music I listen to comes from movies, whether it's soundtracks or scores. And so I don't like, I'm not up on the top music of today or something like that. And so because of that, like, for the films to be able to show and connect with me and show me why music is important to these characters and make me feel something, it always gets more buy-in from me as a result of that. So yeah, that's a little bit of why I really love these movies. And this one, I think the relationship between mother and son and then everyone around them, I thought was really nice.
Andrew, some thoughts?
I think that this movie is charming and just full of heart. And that's my biggest takeaway from it, is I love these characters. Eve Hewson is amazing in this movie, mm-hmm. like absolutely amazing. And it's an interesting character because it's not a character you like throughout the entire movie. Like,
she's
there are
terrible.
Parts of this movie you're like, she's a terrible person. She's a terrible person. But there's something charming and like,
yeah,
I don't want to say naive, but maybe dullish.
Not naive works though, because it's kind of like, almost like she's in denial of herself the whole movie.
I think the movie does.
I think the movie just does a good job of portraying her as a creation of her environment too. Like, you know, like that there is, like we empathize with her as a quote unquote terrible person, whatever that means. Like, you know, making choices that we wouldn't make or doing things that we wouldn't do or saying, you know, being mean or whatever. We contextualize that to her environment, what she's got going on in her life, all of those things. So I think the movie does a good job of making her a complete human being, like you were saying, Alice, so that even though she is doing terrible things, in my opinion, you can go along for the ride of her journey and go, okay, who is she becoming and why, and how is she finding the positive side of her humanity in such a negative space? So, yeah, something like that.
I would also say that I don't know if any of the characters are, like, quote-unquote good people, even the son. Like, I think Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character. No, because even he has, like, you know, we only see him from her perspective, really. We never see his character, but we do hear a little bit about who he is and his past and everything. So it almost feels like he was her once upon a time and since has gotten through it. And then that's kind of almost what, you know, because I don't think it's a spoiler to say it's kind of a love story as well. But, like, I think that's maybe part of why she's connecting to him, because it's almost like he's what she could be in terms of
I think that's exactly it.
His desires and what how he is, and so that's why she immediately connects with him, and then, you know, why they're able to continue whatever that kind of relationship was throughout the movie.
I'm going to talk about Oren Kinlan, who plays the son in Flora, in Son
007,
and I'm sorry, what did you say?
Dublin 07.
Oh, yes. Sorry. Yeah. Dublin 07. I thought you said Doug something. I was like, his name's not Doug. I didn't think his name was Doug. Yeah. Dublin 07. Yes. I think he's really great in this. And I think it's difficult to pull off both the awkwardness of that age as well as the arrogance of that age. And he balances those really well. It felt like an authentic young teenager, you know. It really felt like an authentic youth, especially in that culture and in that area, as far as I know. Not that I've ever lived in Dublin. Andrew, any other things you want to talk about? Positive side?
On the positive side, not really. I do have a question that could possibly just start a conversation. Doesn't have to be negative.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
What is this movie trying to say? Because I honestly couldn't come away with a moral or anything that this movie is, like, saying, like, this is what you need to take away from this.
It's saying the same thing that every John Carney movie says.
Yeah.
music
will heal the soul. That's
I was going to say, music can heal broken people.
Yes, that's what every Carney movie is about, is how the
and
power
Dublin
of music.
And Dublin isn't as picturesque as you think it is, people from everywhere else in the world.
Is that the message? Because I'm heading that direction next year, and I'm thinking about hitting Ireland and Scotland. And
you should definitely go there. Yeah, no, okay. You should definitely go there. From everything I've heard, I've always wanted to go as well. But I think it's him, you know, he always makes movies about, but now he's made two movies, I think, about the area of Dublin that he grew up in, which are like the projects. And so, yeah, I think it's just a show. It's not just the green and the pretty and the, you know, old houses. It's also like people, you know, because there is a pretty intense sort of like gangster element across Ireland and England in general and the UK. So I think he just wants to show that element without it being like a Guy Ritchie film. Where it's like, this is just what it's like. People just want to be cool.
Yeah. I actually have a love-hate relationship with John Carney movies. And part of it has to do with what you're talking about, Andrew, with the message. Because I love that mess. I love music. I love how music can bring us together. I grew up in the church and singing hymns, and like there's this community aspect of music that's like buried in my soul just from growing up. And I've sung in, you know, groups, choirs, and, you know, small ensembles. And solos and duets. And I love, you know, one of my first memories with my now wife was, you know, we were a sophomore and junior in high school and sang a duet in a talent show together. You know what I mean? Like aww. There is something aww. Really, I have the video. You want me to play the video? We're going to stop now while play them the video. God. No, I'm just kidding. So anyhow, I love that message, but music doesn't make everything better. And that's where I have the love-hate relationship with. Like, there are underlying problems that music doesn't solve. It just makes you feel good for a second. Like, there has to be...
It's a Band-Aid.
It is. It's a Band-Aid, and sometimes surgery is needed. And so that is my love-hate relationship with these movies, is it shows us that surgery is needed with this mother and son. Mm. Like, they have issues, right?
Yeah. When you were reading the plot out, and you were like, despite her efforts, blah, 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 and I was like, what efforts? She is the worst mother I've ever
besides
seen.
Besides the effort she believes she's making.
Right,
yeah,
right.
Exactly.
So, so surgery is needed, and writing a song together isn't going to solve that. It's just in the real
writing
world.
Writing two songs together.
You're right. There were two. I take it all back. Everything's fine now. So that is my love-hate relationship with these movies, is often, you know, they make music a miracle medicine. Sorry for the alliteration. It just came out of nowhere. Instead of actually dealing with the problems that are underneath. And so that's just kind of a through line for his stuff. And it's definitely here. It may be here even more than in his other stuff. Like, it was its most obvious to me in this movie.
Have you seen Once?
Yes.
Okay. Cause that one is less like Band-Aid-y. It was more
correct.
Realistic, which is, I think, what helped him shoot onto the scene more. And see, I've always seen these films as kind of hyper realistic, you know, almost fantasy, because they're always shorter. So the stories are always quite simple. I've found, like, especially, you know, Begin Again, there's this whole thing with like a record deal, and it's all a bit ridiculous. Same with Sing Street. And then obviously this one where, everything happens almost too quickly, right, throughout the film, based on where the characters start and where they end. But I've always almost seen them as like a dream sequence film, where it's showing you a version of reality where music can be a type of surgery, or it can fix that hole that might be in some people's hearts.
Sure.
And as someone who has always really loved, you know, romance and fantasy and that sort of thing, like, I find myself buying it, because I just see it as like one of those ultimate forms of escapism. Like, this isn't real life. No, like, single mother who barely pays attention to where her 15-year-old son is most of the day isn't going to suddenly take a guitar lesson and then be like, no, I love my son and will fight for him all the time. Mm-hmm. That's not going to happen. And you're not going to, you know, all the things that happen in the film are unlikely, but I just saw it as like, this is the best version of this society in a way, which is why I'm always like game for it.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I am too. It moves me, you know, like, I'm definitely moved by this movie. I'm moved by the finale. I'm moved by a few of the musical moments, which I think are really good. But overall, it's difficult in that way. Andrew, other thoughts?
This movie leaves a feeling of unfinishedness. The movie introduced, and apologies for spoilers, but there's several moments of will they, won't they chemistry that never gets answered, really. Like, by the end of the movie, I think I know where they're standing, but for, I'd say, about 80% of the movie, it's telegraphing something, and then it turns out the movie has no interest in finishing that story arc at all.
Alice, how did you feel about that stuff?
Well, I was going to say, one of my cons in general about John Carney films is that I find that his endings are quite weak or not weak, but they're always rushed. Like, I always feel like they're kind of like, but you know where it goes, right, from there. And so I think this one had it more than most, where, again, I think I know what's going to happen. But I remember looking at how much time was left in the film at one point, being like, there's only like 30 minutes left. How are we gonna get through? Where are we gonna end up? And so I feel like, again, what I think he's trying to do is make it, again, that point in time. These are real people in a fantasy-type society where it's like, you know what's going to happen. You don't need to see it. You can infer. But it's sometimes you just want to see it. Like, sometimes I don't want to infer. And I think the song that plays over the credits is also meant to be a little bit of an answer. But again, I think when you build up similarly, not just the will they, won't they, but certain questions about even her, like, her relationship with her ex-husband and, you know, what's happening with the son. And, or like, I would like to see a little bit of a 1 month later or something at the end.
Jack Rayner, by the way, only ever seen him in Midsommar. That's the only other place I've seen
him. And Sing Street.
Is he in Sing Street?
Yeah, he plays the brother.
I bet you're right.
Oh, Jack Rayner? Yeah, he's in Sing Street. He's the older brother who I swore was going to get the Oscar nom that year, and he did.
I know.
I think you're right. I think when I saw him in that, I wasn't aware of him at all, and so that just kind of slipped
my
brain.
And he's in that Transformers movie where they do the Romeo and Juliet clause with Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, Aaron, how'd you forget that?
Listen, it's no surprise that Midsommar stood out amongst those
He's
movies.
A little bit more intense in that one.
A little bit little more bit, going on there.
Has a bit more
there.
Of an intense storyline.
Yes.
His ending in that is very good.
Yes, and very clear.
He's just a big old teddy bear. He's just a big old teddy bear.
Listen, I don't know if this is a hot take, but my least favorite part of this movie is Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I think he's terrible in this movie. Mm. I don't. Every time he's on screen, I don't buy it. I think there's something very frozen and wooden about his delivery and his character. When he's contemplating deeper things or talking about his history or whatever, there is something about that character compared to the it may just be the comparison to how fully fleshed out and authentic the other characters feel that just doesn't work for me. And because of that, I was never able to really buy into anything between Flora and Jack. Like it just never worked for me. So am I way off base on that? Like it just felt really bad to me.
Yeah, I think, look, that I was thinking the whole movie, I'm like, I understand what they're trying to do with this whole computer, non-computer connection, but I almost would have preferred if he had just been in America, an American living in Dublin, and then speaking about, you know, LA and his life and how he moved here to try something different, because I felt that when I really sensed their chemistry, we're in those in moments where they weren't on, like, just talking over the computer, those kind of in-between moments, especially there's one on a roof. And I was like, see that? I want more of that. And we didn't get, and there wasn't much more. So
I think that scene's the highlight of the movie.
Mm. Oh, it's not the highlight for me, but it's definitely the highlight of their, like, entire relationship for me. Where, like, not of the film. I think that the mother-son story is so much stronger, and I think that, you know, that whole, you know, just when they connect, those are definitely my favorite moments. But I just think that if they had just been in person and not on a computer, because we're not in COVID anymore and you don't need to do that anymore, that would have been nicer.
Yeah, I didn't buy it. I think I'm trying to figure out why. And I think it's because I think there's a couple aspects to it. I think number one, it wasn't video conferencing enough. Like it was like crystal clear
4K,
like perfect lighting with the mountains in the background, and like it's just like, I don't know. Yeah. It's, she's watching actual YouTube videos, right? When she finds him, and it's just like it's so. I don't know.
Yeah, when she takes like a lesson from a park, I was like, where is the Wi-Fi? does Dublin have like 5G everywhere? Do I just not know that?
I also think, and I could be totally wrong, I just don't think the movie needs the romance angle. I think that teacher, that guitar teacher, could have been anyone, you know, whether, you know, but it would be better if it was someone she wasn't attracted to. I just think the movie would have been better if there was no romance between or attempted sexual tension between her.
You wanted a Mr. Miyagi instead.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, something like that. Like, because the relationship that we're supposed to care about, I think, is her and her son. It's right there in the title. In, you know, not every movie needs boy meets girl. You know what I mean? I don't know. It was just, I feel like this movie may have been better without it. And that was probably the second part of it.
I thought that the romance thing, if it was going to be in it at all, was going to be between her and Jack Reynolds, between her and her ex-husband. Like, I thought that that was going to be a whole thing where, you know, she tries to win him back, but then she realizes that she doesn't need him anymore. Like, I thought there was going to be a whole story there. Because again, when you first meet even him, you're like, he's the worst. He's the worst person in the world. But then he gets a little bit of dimension as well. And then I just feel like that would have been better. And then I agree, like, she could have just had a friend. I feel like that almost would have been more powerful to just have a friend. Also, because the whole time I was like, what is the age split? Because I feel like, how she's meant to be like 30-ish. And then how old is Joseph Gordon-Levitt? I don't even know.
He's like in real life in the movie?
Yeah, I guess both.
I think he's like 44, 45.
Yeah. And then she, how much younger is she? So she's like 10 years younger than him. So I guess that's not too intense. Yeah. But I do think that it would have been fine if it had just been a friendship. Because I think there's something to be said about friendships and how those can heal you and how it doesn't. And even it could have honestly started the same way where, you know, she over sexualizes him, but then it grows something deeper. Like, I agree. I think that could have been really powerful.
Yeah. Anything else we want to talk about? Alice, you got one last thing?
I thought 90 minutes is a great amount of time for a film, and more films should do that instead of 3.5 hours. Killers of the Flower Moon coming up.
Have you seen Killers of the Flower Moon?
I haven't yet.
Then you don't get to talk about its runtime. I'm sorry. Look, this is the thing. I'm done with people complaining about long movies that they haven't seen.
Like, I know, but I'm just saying it's nice to have the other end of the spectrum sometimes. Sure, like, course. I'm sure I'm going to love it. I never have an issue with it while I'm in the film. It's just planning, okay? Yes. I have things to do.
Uh-huh, yes. Bathroom breaks to take. I get it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Andrew, do you got one last thing?
No post-credit scene, but there is a song that's in the credits that is technically a part of the movie, if that makes sense. So it's worth sticking around for. Good song.
That'd be my one last thing as well, is just the music in general. Once again, I think it's amazing. I've already popped this on while doing some work recently, and it's just great music. It's just these movies always end up having great music, and I end up listening to it. So I think it's just the harmonies. There's a great sense of harmonies.
Yeah.
Harmony I in also his films. Think
they all kind of sound similar in a good way, where I feel like if you put on all the music of all the films in one big playlist, it would just work really nicely together.
Yeah, definitely. That is Flora and Son. It is available on Apple TV Plus. Let's move on to the next review. Let's talk a little bit about Gran Turismo.
What is this?
It's a contest.
The best Gran Turismo players
in the world
get a chance to compete in professional racing.
Dude, this is real.
This is real.
I'm sorry. You really think you're going to take a kid who plays video games in their bedroom, you're going to strap them to a 200-mile-an-hour rocket? It'll tear them to pieces.
The ultimate wish fulfillment tale of a teenage Gran Turismo player whose gaming skills won him a series of Nissan competitions to become an actual professional race car driver. This is a video game, I guess. Gran Turismo is a
true story video game.
This is a
don't get many of those.
This is a true ? Story that takes place in our world. Orlando Bloom, David Harbour, Archie, I believe it's Mataquay, coming in as the main star. And also Jerry Harwell, Ginger Spice, hanging out as his mom. So that was fun to see, too.
Jaimin Hunsu.
And yes, yeah. Jaimin Hunsu as well. What did you guys think about Gran Turismo? Oh, I should mention Neil Blomkamp directed this.
Oh, yeah.
What did you guys think of Gran Turismo? I almost said Torino, which is a different movie. Andrew, did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
I liked it.
Yeah? Alice?
Yeah.
I hated it.
Ooh, passionate responses are fun. I could not feel more similarly to this movie than to Floor and Son. Low side of liked it. Can't quite only say it was just okay. There's too much to like for me to say it was just okay, but I do have issues. So, yeah. Andrew, you seem solidly in liked it. So
oh my God, you love it.
Yeah.
Why don't Number you, one movie of the year, ladies and gentlemen.
Why don't you tell us about it?
I think this movie is an adrenaline ride from start to finish. I bought into it, and maybe it's the fact that I like racing movies that it was kind of an easy in for me. And I think it pays homage to a lot of racing movies that came before it. I get a lot of Ford v Ferrari in this. Maybe it's just because Le Mans is
they both end in the same race. So
yeah,
that'd be funny if somebody drove by, from Ford v Ferrari during that, like if we found out it was the actual same
Christian Bale.
Yeah. I see Christian Bale come by.
That'd have been a cool cameo.
But wasn't it fascinating, if you have seen Ford v Ferrari, it is fascinating to see how the sport has evolved since then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how the cars have evolved, the track has evolved, you know, the pits, everything has changed and it has been modernized. I think that Neil Blomkamp did a really good job of taking me on this journey, this quote-unquote true journey that Archie went through.
Or
Jean, I should say, not Archie.
Yeah. I should also mention this is England, right? This happened in England.
Mm-hmm. He was English.
UK-based today.
Well, it was a UK-based promotion, wasn't it?
No, I mean between the two.
It was a world promotion.
Are you sure, yeah. Andrew? It was a world promotion?
Yeah, they had people there from the US and stuff.
Okay.
The characters in it were like American and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. And there was like a German one, and then there was like a Spanish one.
Okay.
It was a world contest.
Okay. But the first part of it was the UK part of it. Maybe that's where my brain figured out.
He logged the fastest lap speed for his region, which was the UK.
Okay. So I do not hold, for the most part, a true story to being an absolute true story. Like, you don't have to tell me exactly what happened for me to be entertained by your based on a true story movie. This movie takes a lot of liberties with the order of it puts things and the way it condenses the time frame of different things that happened in this person's life, and with the way it takes one moment from their entire career, maybe 5 or 6 years into their career, and makes it like the defining moment of, you know, their first year or whatever. Like, I get that happens. I understand that, you know, true stories have to kind of condense and do all that kind of stuff. So I don't hold it against it too much. However, I do think in this case it does harm my investment a little bit, because this is a movie that's like, I can't believe that actually happened. And then when you read about it, you're like, oh, that actually didn't happen. You know, so like that part of it gets a little annoying. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoyed most of this movie watching it, like being entertained by it. I thought the racing was well shot, was really well done. I thought we got a good sense for what makes racing interesting, you know, from a racer's point of view, from a mechanic's point of view, from the pit's point of view. I thought the movie was funny. I think David Harbour is great.
He's so good.
And I liked seeing the softer side of him here. I thought that was really, really good. I had a good time with the basics of this movie. And when the basics of a movie work, overall, I'm just going to have fun. Alice, what are some of your first thoughts?
Positives, yes. I have some. David Harbour is good. No, David Harbour is like, he was definitely the best part of the film for me, where I was like, I just wanted to watch the scenes with him because they were the ones that I was actually enjoying in a way. I also think Archie, what was it, Madakwe? I thought he was quite good. Like, I could see him doing well in the future. I was like, okay, I've seen enough here. I look forward to seeing him in other projects. And I agree, the racing scenes were fun because I also enjoy just racing scenes in general. And after the film, I just kept talking to my friend about how much I want more movies about racing, and specifically how we should have more Formula One movies. I know that there's one currently being made in the Formula One track, but like, I was just thinking, there's so many stories around there that'd be so cool to see more of. But yes, I think there's a lot of potential in the film. And about halfway through, I figured out how I would fix it for me. And then that bothered me for the rest of the movie. And I know that we're...
Oh, that happens.
Yeah, and I know that we're reviewing the movie we see, not the movie we want. But I will just say, because I found that for me, not to get into negatives early, I had a real issue with the pacing. The pacing for me was all over the place, because at some points it was like, and now it's 2 years later, and I was like, what? And then other times we spent so much time on like 2 days, and I then halfway through I was like, oh, this should have been two movies, because we should have had a whole movie about him getting into the school thing and then, you know, trying to be the chosen Nissan. Like, that could have been a whole film, and that would have been cool. You would have gotten to know the other characters. You would have gotten, you know, more understanding of who he is and the work it went into for the training. And then a sequel, because if it had money, a sequel, and then that could have been about his first few years on the track. And I think as soon as I realized that, I was like, oh, that would have been so much better. And then that just, I just couldn't get, just kept hitting me the whole movie.
I don't know if I would like that more or not. I think I liked how they did this movie. It could have been better, absolutely. But I think I like combining the school with him actually racing. I do understand your complaint, because the actual him racing in Formula One is very minimalistic in this movie. He does, it's like 80% the school, but I'm okay with that. I don't know why. Maybe it's the fact that for me, that seemed to be the more interesting element of the movie, seeing how this wild marketing scheme came together and quote unquote worked. You know?
Yeah.
So one of my negatives is I'm not sure how the movie shows us how it worked. Like, the movie, it says, okay, this person came from here, and it has a couple moments where they're like, oh, when I was playing the video game, I took my own lines. Oh, I'm seeing the course with its own lines. But like, the movie didn't really go into like why a video game player, you know, would have an advantage over, you know, somebody else or whatever the case may be. Which I thought would have been interesting to go a little more in depth, you know, with that kind of stuff. But the truth of the matter might just be that they don't. It might just be that it's the training that actually teaches them how to be.
Yeah, because he's terrible when he just has, like, he's good enough, but when he gets onto the track, they're all kind of not great, except for the American one, because, of course. And then he trains and he gets good, because of course he's going to win, because the movie's about him. So I was never tense during the school scenes, which I guess, you know, maybe that goes against what I just said about having it be two films. But I will also say this. I understand before anyone yells at me, I know that that's what, like, Formula One and stuff, there's ads everywhere. I get it. But my God, this whole thing just felt like the most blatant, intense advertising. It just felt like a really long Sony ad. And I just, everywhere I looked, it was like, you know, product placement, product placement, product placement. It was so in your face. And I was just like, is this just one of those, you know, it felt like the bonus DVD you get with a console when you buy it to show you how, like, it looks. That's what the previews, movie felt like to me. Yeah, yeah. Like, when you bought a DVD player back in the day and you got Tomb Raider, Lara Croft Tomb Raider for free, just so that, and Jimmy Neutron Boy Genius, just so that you could, like, put it on and be like, look how it works. It works well, right? Anyway,
you know, there's a little bit of cognitive dissonance with the incredible video game graphics, but also flip phones and MP3 players. Like, what era are we actually in here? Where are we supposed to be? Is this, but you know, it's, I think it's supposed to be a PS5. It looks like it's supposed to be, even though this wouldn't have happened at that time, but.
I think it's meant to be like 2000, like early 2000s.
I think that's when it happened, but I don't know that this movie
PS3.
Yeah, I don't know that this movie takes place when it should have happened. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, they're advertising the PS5, so that's why they were like, it's fine. Like, nobody cares. They're watching a racing movie, which is what they want you to think. Because even the trailer, I remember being like, a true story? What? And I just think there's so much you could have done with the premise, and it all just felt so... I know you guys liked it, and I'm sorry I'm hating on it so much, but, like, it was such a basic film. The plot was, like, I knew exactly what was going to happen. I understand that it's because it's a true story, but, oh, my gosh, the whole time I was, like, I literally started toward the last 45 minutes being like, and now this is going to happen, and now this is going to happen, and then everything I said happened. And I just, that's why the pacing, this, going back to the pacing, it's just, it's all over the place because at some points I felt like I had whiplash and then other points I was bored out of my mind. And so.
Oh, so it's like going to a race.
I've never been to one, so I'll have to take your word on that.
Oh, he's so boring. Sorry, race fans. I've never been more bored than when I went to see the Indy 500.
We'll see them next time they pass.
There's a reason.
Oh, you went to the 500?
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's like how many hours of just sitting there watching cars turn left?
There's a reason those stands are the filthiest in, you know, all of sports, because everybody's bored and just eating buckets of chicken.
Is that the one where they go around in circles for like 50 laps or 100 laps? Okay, yeah,
something like that.
It's way more than 50 laps.
Yeah.
It's
maybe
about
500 or so? Yeah, somewhere around there. Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So,
10 times.
I do want to kind of address a couple things, Alice, that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. As far as wanting there to be two movies and the pacing, I don't think I wanted two movies. I don't think this needed to be two movies. I think this needed to be a tighter one movie. I want to go the opposite direction. I think this could have been condensed a little more. There are times when this movie lingers in the, like, fifth place, seventh place, third place, you know, like the season going on, or even in the Le Mans race where it's like, you know, now they're in third and there's, you know, 14 hours. I just, like, we get it. Like, I don't need 20 minutes of that, right? Like, to understand how the ending is going to happen. So, like, I think this movie could have been actually condensed more than it was, and I agree it has pacing issues. I just may have fixed it like the opposite direction if it were up to me.
Question: how much can we spoil given it's a true story? Like, can we talk about basic story moments? Because there's one bit in particular where I was like, we spent so much time on this like random B plot, but we're skipping, like, this is just taken care of now. We've had 10 minutes on it. And something that would be really traumatic and would, like, apparently so traumatic, and apparently it's been a really long time, felt like it went for about 5 minutes, and because the movie has to get to where it needs to get to. And I totally agree with you on that.
It needs it there in the movie for storytelling purposes. Like, that's the third act conflict, basically, that every movie has to have, for, you know, the protagonist to get over, to find the final resolution. And so it kind of needs it there in the story. And because, I mean, the time from third act conflict to third act resolution is always short. That's part of storytelling. Mm. Like, you present it there, you show them conquering, like, it's like this immediate 1-2 punch thing. So I think you're right. I think there's not enough time spent in it. However, saying that, I still thought it was effective.
Oh, it got me.
It really got me. And I think...
But that's what I mean. I would have loved more time spent. Because that felt real and different.
Yeah.
That felt different. I haven't seen that before. When it, like, I've seen the thing that happened in other racing movies, but it's time's never been spent on that because mm-hmm. I feel like people have always been like, it happens, you know? Like in Talladega Nights, because I watched that the other day for the first time in years. Nice. But... I was like, this is interesting. This is different. This is something that would seriously affect a person. And one quick little drive isn't going to fix that after sulking for apparently a very long time. Like, yeah,
It's movies. It's just movie. Yeah. It's a movie. It just, you know,
movie,
I don't know.
Too hard. Go back. Movie slightly less. Like, just, I'm just saying, if you wanted it to be that quick, just make the conflict about the racing. Like, make it that he loses. I mean, that happens enough, but like, make it that he loses and then he has to pick, and he's like, oh no, I have to pick myself up again. Don't add in this extra morality tale and then just skim past it because, oh, we need to get to the big triumphant ending. Anyway.
Yeah.
I do agree with you that that moment should have been lived in more. I think that a movie that did sort of kind of that tone or that vibe perfectly was Ron Howard's Rush after Niki Lauda got in that accident. Ironically enough, he also wrecked on the Nürburgring. It's the most dangerous ring in the world. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on Gran Turismo, Andrew?
I am not sure how I'm supposed to feel about Orlando Bloom's character in this movie. I don't know if it's a
Oh my gosh, I'm yes, to that like was the other not. Thing I wanted to bring up. Oh. Is it just me, or did he look really tired?
I just want to recap what just happened. Andrew said, I'm not sure how to think about Orlando Bloom's character. And Alice was like, I'll tell you how to feel about Orlando Bloom's character. I know how to feel about this. Go ahead, Alice. Tell us how to feel.
Sorry, I didn't mean to. Sorry, I'll let you live in your uncertainty, Andrew. is it just me, or did Orlando Bloom just seem really tired throughout this whole film? Like, I just felt like he was tired, and he was doing this for a paycheck.
He's older.
I know he's older, but that wasn't it. It just, like, the way he was acting felt very, like, a caricature, and, like, everything about it, I was like, are you just, like, trying to just get to the next thing, like this was an in-between thing, because I just didn't believe him. I was like, why are you here? I don't need him. Just have a different, like, have one of the businessmen be one of the, like, be the main guy from PlayStation, or a Japanese dude. Like, why do you need Orlando Bloom? Like, so yeah, that's how I think about it.
Interesting. Well, Alice, I think that you're talking more about Orlando Bloom's performance. I'm talking more about, I don't know how the movie wants me to think about his character.
Right.
I think his performance is fine. It's the actual character itself, because there's moments in the movie where I'm like, oh, is he going to end up being the bad guy because he's going to go all corporate on him and he's going to be like, this is the way it has to be done, or anything like that, you know?
I mean, he has that moment.
He has those moments.
Yeah.
He has that moment.
I think he's just meant to be a businessman. Like, I think they're trying to be like, he's not good or bad. He just cares about this thing succeeding.
An obstacle. He's meant to be an obstacle. The story has him as another obstacle to the Jan character. Because he wants somebody.
But he's such a weeble wobble. You can knock him over, and he's not an obstacle at all.
But I'm just saying I think that's what the story wants from him, because it needs him for that big moment where, you know, we think he's going to be completely unfair, and the movie doesn't really let us know how that was resolved, other than showing us that it was resolved.
Taken care of.
I was like, what was the end of that conversation? I want the end of that conversation.
David Harbour just punched him.
Yeah.
He knocked him out.
I want to just real quick talk about Archie Madikwe, who's our main actor, talking about Midsommar. He's another actor from Midsommar.
Yep.
Wait, who does he play in that?
Simon. He's one of the other friends.
Yep.
What?
That goes.
Yep. Oh my God, my mind is blown.
Yeah, they supposedly left early, but they
did not leave early. Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh man,
it's hard to forget people from that movie. They kind of like burn them into your memory.
Yes. Yeah. To be fair, there are other characters that are burned into my memory from that movie, but literally, anyway.
I can barely stand that pun, Alice. Barely.
You can barely stand it. I think that his performance in this is a bit wooden, like except for that part that we've been talking about, that traumatic moment. I thought that he was very good in that, but I'd say for most of it, I really wasn't buying his performance.
Oh, Orlando! You're still talking about Orlando?
I'm talking about Archie Medical.
Oh, okay.
No, I think Orlando Bloom.
I think that's kind of on purpose. I kind of think that's the character. Yeah, I think that's intentional. I think that because they even mention it a few times about, I mean, that's kind of the point, is like, that's why that's why the Orlando Bloom character doesn't want him, because he's not dynamic. He's not the person that they want in front of the TV cameras and those kind of things. So I think that is a part of the character intentionally.
Well, I think there's a difference between, having a character that's not good on social circles and then having an actor who can't portray emotions in a believable way.
I don't think that's his fault, though. I think that's
the character.
That's how he was directed. Like, yeah. I think that might be more Neil Blomkamp than it is Archie. Like, and that's why I said I could see the potential, and I'm excited to see him in other projects, because the other thing I wanted to talk about, like, jumping off that, is I just didn't feel like... I just kept the whole time being like, this is the District 9 guy. Like, it just felt so unstylistic in comparison. It felt more like Chappie than District 9. And I just, yeah. So, but I just think that with the main character, I think that they wanted him to be like closed off and, very in himself, and maybe like, oh, this is what people that play video games are like. Like, I think that that's maybe part of it.
Yeah.
I think this is his best movie since District 9.
I mean, that's not saying much.
Yeah. Actually, have you guys, not to go off on a tangent here, but have you guys seen Oats Studios on YouTube?
No.
I've heard of it, but I've never watched it.
So Neil Blomkamp started making digital shorts on YouTube, like short movies that are sci-fi based, and they're really, really good.
Interesting.
I highly recommend you check those out. But yeah, he is a hit or miss director. Like, District 9 is so good, and I think that this is pretty decent.
I know it sounds really strange, but I wanted to say this before we get to our one last things on this movie. I think it was, did we do The Creator last week?
Mm-hmm.
And you remember I said, like, Gareth Edwards has been hit or miss, or whatever. And Andrew, you were like, no, he's actually made, like...
Were you thinking of Neil Blomkamp?
I was thinking of Neil Blomkamp. I literally had them, and they don't sound anything alike. And I think I just had him in my mind because Gran Turismo just came out recently. So, yeah, anyhow, just thought I'd clear that up.
And they're both indie sci-fi guys.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, one last thing. Andrew.
No post-credit scene.
Alice, you got one last thing?
Romance wasn't needed. Could have cut that. Would have shaved off 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes of the film, and I would have enjoyed that. Just because a person is coming up in the world, they do not need a romance storyline. You can just make it about the racing.
Or it's the singing.
The singing. Yeah. The moral of the reviews today is... You don't have to shove romance into every film. And I say this as a romance girly. I'm a strong romance girly. But when it's... I don't even remember the name. I kept getting the like actress who played the girlfriend confused with one of the contestants from the PlayStation thing.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wait, what's her name? Who is she? No. Stupid. You don't need it. Cut it.
There. Sorry, Alice. We don't make the rules, but... If you have somebody from 17 to 28 in a movie, they have to be romantically involved with somebody. Yes. It's It's law.
It's really important because the people who are making the movies are already married and they have to like work out their wanting to be dating, you know, go back in time. Yeah. And so they have live vicariously through their stars. So
make it better vicarious living. Read a book.
My one last thing is, God bless Jimon Hansu for showing up and giving his all in a part that was completely nothing. He was going for it. It worked. Yes. And yet it didn't matter because that part was nothing in this movie.
Yes.
Big props to him.
Fully agree. He's such a good actor. When is he? He needs to do a Cillian Murphy. He needs to get that role. Mm. Break him into that leading man.
Yeah.
Spot. Yeah.
Well, there you go. There's our thoughts on Gran Turismo. Before we head on to the Best Ever Challenge, thank you to our Patreon members. Appreciate you hanging out and throwing a couple bucks our way each month. Means the world to us. Keeps the website going. Keeps the podcast going. And you get some fun stuff, including a members-only pre-show that we record just for you. You have access to all of those pre-shows.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All the way back to the beginning of when we started doing them, which is a while now. So there's like a whole new SIFPOP world that you could dive into in your own dedicated podcast feed as a SIFPOP member. So if you want to do that, go to patreon.com/SIFPOP and check out the different levels there. All right, let's head into the Best Ever Challenge. Best Ever Family Movies, movies where a family title is in the movie. So we're talking about things like brother, sister, mother, father, mom, dad, uncle, grandma, grandpa, you know, whatever the case may be. I didn't really stretch this one, although I will say I think every one of my top five is a different member of the family, which I didn't actually do intentionally, but it just happened that way. So we'll go number five to number one. If you have it higher, make sure you let me know so that we can trump it, so that the person who has it highest can talk about it then.
My number one might be a veto. I'm just going to.
Oh, your number one. Well, I will tell you, there were a couple movies where I was like, oh, that would fit. And then I was like, no, that's an age of a person, not a family member. Like, kid. Kid is not a family member. That's a, you know, a child is not a family member.
Oh, dear, then.
Baby is not a family member.
Like, well, look. I struggled. And so you got to give me this one. It's going to be a wild ride, folks.
All right. We'll go from number five to number one. Alice, since we're going to have so much fun with your answers, we'll let you go first. Alice, what is your number five?
I will say my two to five are going to be fine. It's okay. My number one.
It's your number one.
Which is, and my honorable mentions, because I knew that they would be wrong. Uh-huh.
Sure.
My number five is Mother. Because
yeah, there's no way you're getting away with that at number five.
You'll find out later.
All right, Andrew, what do you got at number five?
I have a movie called Mother that is different.
Oh.
This is a 2010 South Korean film.
Yes. Oh, Bong Joon-ho.
I've heard of that one. It must be good. Is it good? It's on your
I watched it today. I watched it today for the first time.
Oh, nice. What'd you think?
And it was really good. Did not see where the movie was going. It's one of those movies where after watching it, you really don't want to say a lot. You're like, just go into this blind and see where it takes you. Roughly, it's about a mother who's trying to prove her son's innocence over a murder. That's all I'll say about it. And it's a fascinating movie, great performances, really good.
There are three great movies called Mother. The other is the Albert Brooks movie that is called Mother. It's 90s, I think came out in the 90s. Well worth a watch. Really great. So, yeah, there you go.
This was Mother, not Mother!
Correct. But the Albert Brooks one is also Mother. So there's two mothers in one. Mother! So there you go.
Yeah. What's your number five, Aaron?
My number five is The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Is it U.N.C.L.E. an acronym?
That's an acronym.
It's the word U.N.C.L.E. though. It's the
it
word
works.
U.N.C.L.E.
I'm going to let you have it. I was saying that just because I'm so mad I didn't think
of
it.
I'll give it to you, but you have to give me my number one. That's the rule.
Like I was going to take it away. I really enjoy this. I think it's really well done. Does not get the attention it deserves for a fun action movie. Possibly some problematic actors in it now. But
Henry Cavill. Henry Cavill's still fine. He's still fine, right? Please tell me he's still fine.
I haven't done the math recently. Ask me. I have no idea.
Henry Cavill and Alicia Vikander are great.
He's not the one I was talking about. That's all I know.
Yeah, I know. But you said actors, and then I was like, oh no.
The movie is great. Man from U.N.C.L.E. is my number five. Let's go on to our number fours. Alice, what do you got at number four?
I will say three of mine are related to mums. So my number four is Parallel Mothers. Is anybody else? Okay. No? Okay. So
this one.
It was nominated. You should. It was nominated for Oscars like 2 years ago. Penelope Cruz was nominated, and it is it's a foreign language film, and it's Spanish or Mexican, I want to say. It's one of those two countries. It's in Spanish, I should say that much. And it's basically, you know, about Penelope Cruz and this other mother, hence the name, and their kind of very complex relationship around what it is to be a mother. And, you know, the whole idea of the theme of motherhood, the responsibility and how it can affect a person. It's actually going in, I thought I'd be bored. And because I was cooking while I was doing it. And I vividly remember stopping cooking and then sitting down and watching the whole film because I was so engaged by the character work. I was so engaged by the direction and the music. The score is one of the best scores. And I think it was nominated for score as well that year. But it was like really like tension providing. And I don't know. It was just a really interesting look into motherhood in a way that hasn't been portrayed in a long time. So because basically to give the idea, I don't want to spoil it too much, but it's about two mothers that give birth on the same day. And then something happens that ends up connecting them later down the line. And the two main characters, so Penelope Cruz and the other actress is Milena Smith. I think that they have great chemistry. I think that there's a really interesting work happening here. And yeah, I really recommend checking it out if you haven't seen it.
There you go. Parallel Mother.
Parallel Mothers, yeah.
Parallel Mothers.
Added it to my list.
And it's one of the films by Pedro Almodovar. So he's like, you know, one of the big directors of Spain. So can recommend.
Andrew, what's your number four?
Oh, he did the Skin movie with The Skin I Live In. Okay.
Yeah.
What do you got at number four, Andrew?
Mother!
Trump! If you have Albert Brooks' mother at number three, I apologize for.
I don't think he would have yelled.
Every single one on Andrew's list is called Mother.
Called Mother,
That would be a great
I wanted to try and do the bit where, you know, I would choose a different family member per, you know, one. I just haven't seen enough.
Yeah.
What's your four?
My number four is Coal Miner's Daughter. A really great movie starring Sissy Spacek. Tommy Lee Jones is in there.
This is Loretta Lynn biography, right?
It is a correct Loretta Lynn story. And it is incredible. Michael Apted directed it. Well worth a watch. Pretty incredible stuff. Coal Miner's Daughter is my number four. Number threes. What do you got, Alice?
The Mummy.
Great pick. Wouldn't have thought of it. Great. I love it. Great pick.
It counts. People call their mums mummy all the time. And in Australia, you spell it with the U.
You're preaching, you're preaching to the choir. This absolutely counts.
Yeah. I mean, I it is just a great film. It's like Brendan Fraser.
Not Tom Cruise.
Not Tom Cruise? I thought we were going with Tom Cruise, The Mummy.
No, that is on my dishonorable mentions, even though I saw it three times because I got forced to. So it's also, I've got low key PTSD from that one.
Yeah.
And so, no, it is not the one with Sofia Boutella and Tom Cruise where that they released a trailer where there was no sound in it. No, it was not that one. It is the 90s one where it has Rachel Weisz with the most plucked eyebrows you've ever seen, and good for her that they grew back. You've got Brendan Fraser as an extremely debonair and handsome archaeologist type person, and it was fun. Like, honestly, so much of this is riding on my nostalgia because I haven't seen it in years, and I kind of don't want to because I don't want it to not be as good as I remember it being. Yeah, I've been wanting to sit down and watch them all because I actually haven't seen the third one, but I also am like, maybe I don't need to.
let's not get ahead of ourselves here. You can just watch the first one.
Maybe just the first one, yeah. And then it's such a fun movie. Like, sometimes you just want to watch a fun, silly little fantasy that's good and doesn't need to be remade, you know, years later. It's fine. Just leave it. Leave it as it is. Brendan Fraser was the best one, and you don't need Tom Cruise. Just stay in your Mission Impossible line, okay? And Top Gun. Oh my God, Top Gun. Stay there.
He was on Top Gear.
That sounds very on brand for him. But yes, The Mummy. Love that film. Great film.
Very nice, Andrew. What's your number three?
In the Name of the Father.
Mm-hmm. Daniel Day-Lewis.
You know, I had to have DDL on my list.
Mm-hmm.
Alice, I would really, if I were you, I would really bump this up on your need to watch list.
Mm.
A, because it's Daniel Day-Lewis. B, because it's a true story. And C, it's a fascinating, horrifying true story about some Irish residents who were locked up for a car bombing that they did not commit. And they were in prison for 12 years. It was a rough movie. Great performances all around. Yeah, great movie.
There you go. In the Name of the Father, in at number three for Andrew. My number three is Son of Rambo. Now, if you're looking for this movie, you need to be advised that Rambo is spelled with a W at the end, like rainbow, but Rambo. Son of Rambo is Garth Jennings movie. It was the first movie, I believe the first movie he directed. And it follows a couple of schoolboys in 80s England as they imitate they think it's like to be Rambo. You'll notice a young Will Poulter is in this movie. And it is a lot of fun. So I think Edgar Wright shows up in this movie as well. So, yeah, Son of Rambo is a lot of fun. This movie is now 16 years old. I cannot believe it. It's crazy how time flies. Son of Rambo is great. Garth Jennings went on to direct The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which I like more than most people do.
That's a great movie.
And then he is now bringing the only likable parts to the Sing movies. He directed both Sing and Sing 2. So, and you can see his sense of humor in there. That is Son of Rambo in at my number three. All right, number twos. Alice, what do you got at number two?
This might get trumped, but The Father?
It's my number two as well.
Well, there you go. Let's talk about it.
It's
my first honorable mention. So so good.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I'm not going back to watch it that much because it's so harrowing, but it is just beautiful. I think, like, it, obviously Anthony Hopkins, amazing. So amazing that he caused one of the biggest upsets in Oscar history as a result. Not upsets, but you know what I mean. Shocks, I guess, yeah, is a better word. Shock. Is, yeah. Even so shocked, even Steven Soderbergh didn't guess it.
It's not his fault. I mean, it's not his... And he and was better.
So shocked he was in bed when it got announced because he didn't think he would win it. So, but yeah, I agree. I think it just goes to show that his performance is just astounding in that film. But I don't want to talk about his performance because I feel like it's been talked about a lot. I want to talk about everyone else's performance around him. I think Olivia Colman is just... I mean, she's one of my favorite actresses working right now, actors working right now. I mean, she's just amazing. All the other cast and the way in which I actually feel like for once a film that's based on a play actually used the medium of film in a way that was interesting and really put you in the headspace of the father, you know, as his mind is degrading, and as someone who is horrified by the idea of Alzheimer's and a little bit worried she's going to end up with it herself, it definitely gave me nightmares that night. But, like, it's just very well done. Great film.
Yeah, Andrew, talk about it a little more.
The feat that it must have been to accurately portray what it must feel like to go through Alzheimer's in a way that we as an audience could still understand the story at the same time is beyond impressive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Kind of like what Alice says, everybody's going to be talking about Anthony Hopkins' performance. It's one of the best performances ever. it's funny because I think that he's obviously going to be remembered for his entire career as Hannibal Lecter, but I think this is his best performance. I think this is the best performance he's ever given in his entire
life. He's in this movie a little bit more, that's for sure.
I think you could
that is very true.
I think you could certainly have that discussion. Best Anthony Hopkins performances is a fun discussion because he is incredible in almost everything he touches.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's very good. Just to simplify it, he's a very good...
even when he mails it in, he's amazing, which I assume he was doing in Westworld. But he's incredible in Westworld. All right, so...
That's my number two. So what's yours?
My number two is Mother! On all three of our lists, I had it at number two. Andrew, you had it at number three?
Four.
And Alice, you had it at number five. That's actually surprising to me. This is a kind of love it, hate it movie. Yeah. It's wild that all three of us love it enough to have it on our list. I don't think it's any secret that Andrew and I love this movie. We've talked about it before. But for me, it is one of those singular movie experiences.
Mm-hmm.
This is a one of one with the experience of going to a movie, thinking I understood the metaphor of the movie, having a conversation with somebody else who thought they understood the metaphor of the movie completely and wholly, and we were both right. And then a third person could have also been right. This movie has three distinct, complete, and unified metaphors in it, and it is astonishing the way that it works out. My only hit on this movie is that it is a metaphor movie. It's not a narrative film. Mm-hmm. It is a metaphor movie. You are going to watch a metaphor. You're not going to watch a narrative film. And, you know, I like it better when a movie can be both. I really do. But this is a great metaphor movie. Maybe the best metaphor movie. If you just judge that element of it. So, yeah, I really, really, really dig Mother and everything that it's trying to do. Andrew, you had it next. So what are some of your thoughts, stuff you might add to that?
Jennifer Lawrence's performance, the believability she brings to such an absurd and psychotic story.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
She
should have been nominated.
She should have won.
Alice, any further thoughts?
I mean, I will always remember watching this film because I agree. It was such a unique experience, and especially because it didn't click for me until the drive home. And I remember having literally a eureka moment. Like, I exclaimed and I scared the living daylights out of my friend who was driving, because I was just thinking and thinking and thinking. But I also will always remember. So we were sitting in the movie theater, the movie ends, and just out of nowhere, someone else in the theater just exclaimed, "What the?" and everyone started laughing, because I think we were all just in shock from what we had just witnessed.
Yeah.
And then like, normally, you know, you come out of a movie and you're talking about it and talking about it and talking about it, but I think I was just processing it. And then, yeah, I had my little moment and I was like, oh my God. And then all I did, I was up so late researching and reading articles about it and, you know, just like really diving deep, because I love high concept films. They're so, especially when they're actually interesting, and not just like two in the, like, you could almost say this two in the concept, but I do believe as well the performances of Javier Bardem and Jennifer Lawrence just bring something to this film, which just, like, you cannot look away. It's like, you know when people say it's like a car crash, you can't look away, but it's like a good car crash, if that makes sense. I just, and then also the fact that Kristen Wiig is in this film is so random to me and will always be so random to me. But, oh, I think Darren Aronofsky, like, just had something he needed to get out with this film. And it's so good. It's just bizarre.
Did he write it as well?
I don't know. Let's look it up. We have the wonders of the internet around us. But I just, yeah, it is definitely something that is so vivid in my brain still, even though, yeah, like, I haven't seen it. Yeah, yeah, he did.
Oh. Yeah, yep.
He had some stuff he was working through, clearly.
All right, there's my number two. So let's go to our number ones. Mm-hmm. Hey, Alice, what is your number one movie that
you
contains...
You know how you said, like... child doesn't count?
Yeah.
Well, it does, because people say, this is my child.
Right. Or all this the is time. Your child, or this is a child, or...
But you can also use it in the, like, possessive way, and that's how it counts. So I'm going with Children of Men. Leave me alone. It's fine. It's such a
not
good
even
movie.
Child, children. You went with children, just like the general concept of young human beings.
No, you can say, oh, where are my children? Oh, these are my children. Oh, where are the children, husband or wife? You know, it's stuff that said, you, if you have more than one, you say kids or children. You don't say, where is my son and daughter? You know,
listen,
you,
I'm not taking
them.
It away from you. I just know that
children,
I just qualified
amazing.
Those words for me. So
okay. Well, I was struggling, and look, it's not as bad as the other one I had as my number one and bumped to my honorable mentions, because I was like, that's not going
to
work.
Well, I'm excited to hear it. I'm excited to hear it.
But yes, Children of Men, it's amazing. We all know it's if you haven't seen it, I feel like it's still underrated all these years later. So definitely watch it, especially right now. It's so, you know, relevant. I feel like it's one of those films that will always be relevant in some way. And also filmmaking wise, it's just incredibly impressive. Alfonso Cuarón, great work.
There you go. Andrew, what is your number one?
Currently number 42 on my top 100 movies of all time, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
That's my number one as well. Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Talk about it.
Ooh, what a fun movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are few movies that even just the mention of them will put a smile on my face. This is one of those movies. It's just endearing. It's, oh, I was thinking the other day, if there are any other movies like this that take a great epic poem or, you know, anything like that, and then recontextualize it as a period piece. I can't think of any other movies. I could just be forgetting them, but can't really think of any other movie that does what Oh Brother, Where Art Thou does.
Yeah, it's amazing. I, like you, enjoy it. It's a front to back watch for me. If I happen to see it on, it glues me to it. I think George Clooney is astonishing in this movie. I think the Coen brothers are just, I don't know why. I mean, I think I might know one reason why, but I have a hard time when people are like greatest directors of all time and nobody mentions the Coens. I just, like, their library, I put it up against the best of the best. You know, I think it's in the conversation with Scorsese and Spielberg and Hitchcock.
They're cheating.
And
there's two of them.
That's the reason. That is the one reason that I think it may not happen that way, which is weird, maybe understandable, but...
you're not alone, though, Aaron, in this... They should be in the conversation.
They really should. You're not alone. They really should. I also think there's bonus points on this one because it's directed by the Coen brothers. So, you know, it's got the director and the title.
Okay. Well, if I knew we could do that.
Wait, is there a movie directed by Julia Childs?
Do you like this movie, Alice?
I've never seen it. It's on my list of shame. I know. I need to
check it out.
I'm young, okay? It's fine.
I'll tell you what really has helped me with my list of shame is to tick off a director or an actor or to like just look at their list and just go, okay, I'm going to find out where all of their stuff is available.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to tick them off. Like, and the Coens is a good one to do that with. So.
I mean, I've made a list. I shared it with you even, Aaron.
Yes.
I have been distracted with video games and stuff recently. Uh-huh, but I will get back to it, and it's fine. It's fine. I've got my first list. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou is on that list. And I will work through that, and I'm going to go back to watching one a week. And then just watch. Watch how my repertoire unfolds.
Nice. Yeah, that's right. Yes. That's right.
Well, just remember, Aaron and I both had it as our number one.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, true. Goodness.
That's true.
I better like it.
Yes, that's how this works. You must like the same things that we do.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk honorable mentions. Andrew, what did the Sif Pop Gurus have to say this week?
So there was one on here that I don't know if it counts or not. So you are going to have veto power
for
the gurus this week. Mm-hmm. Number three this week was Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, which is fine.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one that might... get vetoed. The Godfather 2.
I'd count that.
Ooh.
I'd count Godfather. I just didn't think
about The Godfather.
I would absolutely count that. Even if I didn't count the father part of it, like Godfather is also a very specific relationship, you know? So like,
but I didn't know if it was familial because I would have had it on my list.
Sure, sure.
I really wouldn't.
But I'd count the father part of it, even if I didn't count the Godfather. So
okay.
Yeah.
Well, then we can take out. Well, even though I like, Mother.
Yeah.
Then I would have taken out that and put in Godfather 2 because it's the Godfather 2.
Yeah. I would have had the Godfather on my list.
And number one from the gurus this week is a movie none of us mentioned: My Cousin Vinny.
Good choice.
It's
good
on my
choice.
List of shame.
Yeah, I didn't even think of My Cousin Vinny. I wouldn't have had it on my list, but yeah, that's a good choice. That was number one for them.
Yep.
All right.
Number one.
Alice, upset us with your honorable mentions.
All right. I'll start with some that will be fine.
Okay.
So we had things like The Wife, the Glenn Close movie.
Sure. Good movie.
That she was nominated for and almost won for. Not Without My Daughter, which has like Sally Field and Alfred Molina in it, and it's a very harrowing I don't know if I'd recommend it because it's very sad, but they're very good in it. So The Lost Daughter I think is worth watching.
So good.
I think that there's a lot going on there, and again, Olivia Colman, and not just Olivia Colman,
Jesse Buckley
who is just, I can't wait. She'll win an Oscar soon.
Paul Mescal, so Dakota Johnson.
Yeah, but
Ed
I was
Harris.
Thinking of Jesse Buckley. Yes.
Lost Daughter,
a
man.
Huge, and Maggie Gyllenhaal at the helm. Absolutely amazing. And then I had Tokyo Godfathers, which is a great Christmas film I can recommend. I watched it for the first time.
You had Tokyo Godfathers in your honorable mention? You literally had Godfather? In your honorable mention?
I forgot about The Godfather. I think, okay, look,
wow.
Look, this is what happened, okay? I was making my list, because we didn't have to submit them early this time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made my list last night at 4 a.m. after I finished playing Baldur's Gate. And I was like, I should just find my list now. And normally I just scroll through, like I sort my IMDb watch list by my review, and then I just start at 10 and I work my way down. And I must have scrolled past The Godfather and my eyes didn't catch it.
So, but at some point, and even when you're wrote typing down Tokyo Godfathers.
Look.
The most iconic and famous movies ever made.
That's amazing. I have an addiction with Baldur's Gate. Guys, it's okay. Just like, it's fine. I didn't mean to. Anyway, Tokyo Godfathers is a good, nice film. You should watch it. Anyway. And then my two, which might get vetoed, are Fighting With My Family, which is the Florence Pugh film. Because you say family, like this is my family, but that was the only one of the families.
Hey, hey family.
People say that. That's a very normal thing to say.
What up, fam?
This is my family, you know? Mm-hmm. We say that all the time.
Sure.
And then this one's the bad one. The Princess Bride.
Wait, Bride?
Yeah, because Bride. Because you say like, oh, this is the bride. This is my bride. I'm the groom. I'm the bride and this is the bride, you know?
Right. Yeah. A family member for a day and then they go to wife.
Yeah. Hey, you didn't say the length of time in which they had the name.
Listen, part of the fun is stretching the category. It's all
look,
in good fun.
I could have stretched it further, and then I erased it last minute, so it would have been worse. It could have been worse. I had womb on there, and then I was like, "That's just a bit ridiculous." Alice. Yeah.
Amazing.
Now you're just listing anatomical parts.
I would also mention Father of the Bride. I think it's fun. Sister Act is also really fun.
Oh, Sister Act! Oh, I forgot about that.
Whoopee!
Mr. Anyway. Mom, also really fun. Uncle Buck, also really fun. Those were the other ones that I wanted to mention.
Big pancake.
So there you go. Best ever family movies is what we will say. All right, let's move on to our buried treasure. We'll finish off with something in any area of pop culture that you want to make sure people know about. Alice, you're our guest. You'll go last. Andrew, why don't you go first?
I'm going to go with a YouTube channel called Country Club Adjacent. I don't know if any of you have heard of this channel or not.
Nope.
This is a YouTube channel where professional comics will go to country clubs and like PGA and LIV tournaments. And they will follow around celebrities and roast them as they play golf. And the entire goal is to get them to back off of the tee, like to say something that either makes them giggle or throws them off of their game. And they have A-list celebrities coming through. They have professional golfers. They went around with the Trumps. Like, they were roasting Trump for an entire video. Like, him, like, Don, Eric, Big Don, all of them. It's a really funny YouTube channel, and some of the jokes are, it's not like raunchy or anything like that. It's like you're the poor version of something something, but they're so clever, and it's their timing that really works for them. I really recommend it. Country Club Adjacent.
Country Club Adjacent on YouTube. I'm going to talk about a show that I just found. I think it's been out since the beginning of the year. I had heard nothing about it. And it is on Peacock, I believe, called The Traitors. This is a reality competition show. And I am a reality competition lover. I love Survivor. I love Big Brother. Used to love Amazing Race. I don't watch Amazing Race anymore. It kind of got a little boring for me. The Challenge, love The Challenge. So I love reality competition shows. Well, The Traitors brings, at least the first season, brought together half of the contestants were like reality show, like all-stars. Like you had people from Survivor there, like really like good Survivor players, really good Big Brother players. Like, it was a pretty impressive.
People know how to strategize.
Yeah, people who know how to strategize. And then regular people form the rest of the cast, at least in season one. Rumor is season two is going to be all, like, reality all-stars. But anyways, and it's a really fun concept. The concept is basically like that game Mafia that you may have played growing up, where everybody closes their eyes, somebody becomes Mafia, every night somebody gets murdered, and then every day people try to banish the mafia, and if they don't, then somebody else gets murdered that night. This is the same concept. There are three traitors among the entire game, and they murder someone every night, send somebody home, and then during the day they do competitions to put money in the bank for the winner. And then they have a banishment ceremony, and after they banish someone, they'll stand in the circle of truth and say whether they were a traitor, or I believe they call the rest of the group the faithful. And so whether they're a traitor or the faithful, and so if they banish,
it looks like a cult.
Yeah, it is. It is. Well, so in like the, you know, so if they banish somebody and they're the faithful, everybody's like, ah, we, you know, we can't get these in. So it's really interesting to watch. Really fun. If you banish all the traitors, who's ever left when the last traitor goes home, they split the prize pool. If there's a traitor on the left at the end, they win everything. So that's basically how it works. Or if there's two traitors left, they would split the prize pool, you know, that kind of thing.
It sounds like Among Us, the mole and Clue wrapped up in one.
Well, it has werewolf. It has a very Mafia and Werewolf are very, very similar games. The other thing I haven't mentioned, it is very Clue-like because it takes place in a castle in Scotland, and Tim Curry is the host, and he's
Alan Cumming.
I'm sorry, Alan Cumming. I said Tim Curry. I meant Alan Cumming. Alan Cumming is the host, and he is hilarious on this show.
He'd be a great host.
So I highly recommend The Traitors. I'm about halfway into the season and loving it. Cerie Fields, one of my favorite Survivor players of all time, is on it, which is why I wanted to check it out, just because she's an incredible strategic mind, and I love watching the way she thinks. There you go. That is season one of The Traitors, with season two coming out soon. I read the cast list for season two. It is even more star-studded than season one, with like Sandra from Survivor, like one of the greatest Survivor players of all time, Parvati from Survivor, Johnny Bananas and CT from The Challenge, if you're a Challenge watcher, like absolute all-stars of these games coming together. And then there are other people from other shows I don't watch because they're not competition reality shows, like Real Housewives shows, or I think on the next season there's somebody from RuPaul from Drag Race that's in the cast. They're definitely pulling from all the different reality shows for this, and it's really fun, really interesting. Anyways, that's The Traitors on Peacock.
Nice.
Alice,
let's check that out tonight.
What is your buried treasure?
Yeah, we have one in Australia, actually, and it's all Australian celebrities, so you probably wouldn't know like reality stars.
Yeah,
I don't even know who they are. But
although I did just start watching Australia Big Brother, Big Brother Australia. So
really,
yeah.
Wait, like the new one or the old one?
I can't start with the new ones. I'm too much of a completist. I actually found
so you're doing like the original
ones. I'm watching
ones.
Season one right now, like from like 2001 whenever it was.
So that's it's been rebooted twice now.
Correct. I did all my research, Alice, before I started. Believe me, I've seen every...
Oh, you could have messaged me. I could have told you where to go.
I've seen every episode of Big Brother UK. And every episode of Big Brother US. And I was like, you know what?
You are going to watch some iconic... You know that some of the stars from those Big Brother are now our biggest celebrities?
I believe it.
Like, in Australian
television.
Anybody
from season one? Because I'm about halfway through season one.
God, I need to remember who's in season one. I will research and I will get back to you on the people to watch.
We'll talk.
But there is like some stuff that happens in those early seasons that has become like integrated into the meme culture here. So
amazing.
You'll be a little bit in with my people. But
I'm excited.
Speaking of Australia, I know we're all horror movie fans here. Very clearly. You guys.
If there's one thing you know about this podcast, as you can tell by the movies we're picking in October, is that we're horror films.
And so I just thought, well, of course I'm going to come and tell you about the horror. You probably heard of it, but if you haven't seen it, you have to see it. And it's Australian, which like blew my mind when I started watching it and people started speaking in Australian accents. Because I'll tell you this much, normally when that happens, I tune out because Australian films, they can be really good or they can be really, really bad. And so more often than not, they're not great. But we tend to be all right with the horror movies, like the most recent one, Talk to Me. So it is such a good film. I don't know. Have either of you already seen this?
Mm-hmm. I think I may have buried Treasured this at one point. I can't remember if I did or not. I definitely thought about it because I loved it.
Okay.
Or at least really liked it, to be fair.
For anyone watching, you need to go see this film because, A, like, I am also, I'm not a horror movie fan, but I'm not like, ooh, I'm relaxing. I'm going to put on a film that's going to scare the crap out of me, you know? So, like, but everyone had been talking about this and I was like, all right, I'll go see it. And it was a packed cinema because it was my favorite cinema here is an independent theater. And there was like, I reckon 40, 50 people in the movie theater. And it was one of the most fun viewing experiences because every single person was reacting in exactly the same way. I haven't watched a film through my fingers in so long, but it was so horrifying and it was just so well done. It is basically, if anyone listening doesn't know what it's about a girl in high school whose mum has just died and she gets invited to a friend's house party where they have this hand of a medium that's been embalmed. And if you hold it and say, talk to me, you can get possessed by a dead person. And it's meant to be like some little fun. And then obviously it turns more sinister because also what it does is it reminds me of all the times I went to sleepovers as a kid and we did stupid little summoning games. And now it's made me be like, oh dear, something terrible could have happened if something went wrong because it's 100% real. But I think all the acting's amazing. It's such a tight told story, but also the themes and the metaphors that are explored in this film are just so, it's one of those ones where afterwards you're just taking apart every little element of like, oh, what did this mean? Oh, what does this mean? But also all of that aside, it's just a really scary movie. And there's a moment with a foot and a moment with an eye where I literally was in, like, on the floor. I was so hard, I couldn't watch. And everyone around me was also going, no, don't, like, just screaming. And it was so great. I strongly recommend. It was really good. Talk to me.
I don't like the moment with the eye or the foot. That's not why I like this movie. I can do without this stuff. But the metaphor part that you speak of is pretty great. And I think pretty early on, I locked in on what they were going for. It's clear it's about peer pressure in some ways, but then it gets pretty clear what kind of peer pressure it's about. There's a moment where they tie people to the chair, and it is so symbolically like tying off an arm, like before you shoot heroin or something like that. And it's like, oh, we're dealing with a substance abuse metaphor here, and it works. And the movie has the confidence to play that metaphor to its actual authentic conclusion by the end. Mm-hmm. And not all movies have that. This is a movie, like I was mentioning earlier, that has the narrative and the metaphor, and that's, you know, to its credit. So, I agree with you. Talk to Me is good. So.
Fun fact, this movie is written and directed by YouTubers.
Yep, from Adelaide. Where you're seeing it filmed, Adelaide is not a destination.
it is now.
The most suburb place. Even the city is a suburb. Everything closes at 8. It's crazy. But yes, they are from Adelaide.
There you go. That is Talk to Me.
I've actually had their YouTube channel on my Buried Treasure a couple times.
Oh, nice.
Oh, there you go.
Talk to Me is available video on demand right now for purchase or rent. The Traitors is on Peacock and Country Club Adjacent is on YouTube. Well, congratulations, guys. We managed to do a movie. No, do a podcast.
And we did a podcast.
Do a video game. Do an actual race. What did we do? I don't know. Thanks so much for joining us today for Sif Pop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
And thank you to Alice for hanging out with us again today and stretching the idea of the best ever challenge once again. Alice, where would you like people to seek you out and find you?
Yeah, well, you can always find me as a writer on sifpop.com. I got two reviews coming up soon, one for Physical, the final season, and one for Only Murders in the Building. God, that's such a good show. Just a little spoiler of what I thought there. And then you can also just find me on Letterboxd and Instagram at Ali G Mick, A-L-I-G-M-I-C-H. And you can talk to me about all your opinions and thoughts.
Gotta hand it to you. That was a good pun.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Gotta hand it to you.
Yeah.
No. Slow clap.
Also, thank you to Sip Pop members for giving monthly to make Sip Pop a real thing. Support starts at $3 a month, and you get access to every bonus episode, as well as some other fun perks. Just take a look at the levels to see where those perks go. Find out more at patreon.com/siftpop. Lots of ways to connect with the podcast. Feel free to leave a comment, a rating, or a review at Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen. You can also email feedback@siftpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show, too. So let them know about it. And that listening is much easier than concentrating on racing when Legolas is your manager and Hopper is your coach. We will be back next week with more movies to talk about. We'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a dog that's barking in the background is giving another take. Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a phone that is beeping that needs to be silenced. Done.
See if my voice can hold out for a third try.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.